sportsnetwork.com for everything ESPN Las Vegas. 1100 AM and 100.9 FM. KWWN Las Vegas. It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
All right, here we go, 4 o'clock hour. Every day, the hour in Northern Nevada, Reno, and here in Southern Nevada, Monday to Friday, is brought to you by our friends at Battleborne Injury Lawyers. 766-1400 is the phone number. In the north, you got to dial 775-766-1400. Adam Candy is in as the company. James is here on this Tuesday running the show. Candy, what's going on, buddy?
You know, this guy gets one Jets win.
Right.
And here comes the hat.
You know, funny thing is, this was a freebie Jets hat, and I had thrown on a Yankee hat, and I'm like, you know what? I think the Jets hat will go better with this plain black sweatshirt. I very much have to make sure I'm very copacetic, all one color. Meanwhile, I can't see color, so I've got like four different kinds of black on right now.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that makes sense. No, whatever makes you feel better. I just figured, you know, the Yankee hat's year round. The Jets hat is like you get a handful of occasions each year. Listen, don't think I'm coming from some high perch. My kicker just jammed his foot in the ground last night.
Yep. We're getting to your team in a couple minutes. Funny thing is, I'd gotten a really sweet. I don't know if I wore it on any of the shows. I've only worn it like three times because I was going to wear it when the Jets won this year each week. Hasn't really worked out, but I got like a sweet tiki kind of Hawaiian big Jets shirt. And
oh, I've seen it.
Yeah, I've had a chance to wear it. I finally just said, screw it, man. I'm just going to wear it because they're never going to win. But now they're coming out of it at the perfect time just to blow some spots in the draft.
Absolutely. I know that story as much as anybody else. However, if there's one thing that the Mike Kafka Giants seem to have figured out, it's losing on command. So we might just do it right this year. Might just do it right.
Battleborne Injury Lawyers presents the Big Four at Four. Number four.
All right, every time Candy's on, I have to ask about the latest with this prediction market stuff, and you grumble and you're like, oh, this is okay. Now I'm seeing this Kelce thing, which you tried to explain in the past. Now I'm seeing it involved in lawsuits. I also saw something happen here in Nevada where the state of Nevada is like, cut it out, get out. What is the latest with this Kelce and what are these prediction markets? Because by the way, one of the other ones I saw, one of the kids featured who put it together, was featured on 60 Minutes, and the more I watched that, I was like, this is a load of bullcrap.
Well, it's so interesting that you would come away with that take off it as you talk about Polymarket having been on 60 Minutes last week, and Shane Copeland, the guy at the head of that, who is just slightly more savvy in terms of the media than Tarek Mansour, who's in charge of Kelce. You hear about these things, you think, oh, Polymarket, Kelce, what are you talking about, right? What we're talking about is these companies that have found a loophole to be able to offer something that looks a lot like sports betting, walks, talks, quacks like sports betting in places like Nevada online, but really isn't a sports book and doesn't have to play by the same rules as a sports book and isn't regulated the same way as a sports book. You go down and use that STN app or any of the others that you might have here in town. That's the Nevada Gaming Control Board. That's Nevada Gaming Commission. Like they've got oversight of all of those things. This stuff going on with Kelce is a whole different ballgame. What happened this week is a class action lawsuit. I don't know exactly how far this one goes in particular. There are all sorts of lawsuits at the state level out there talking about, y'all are really offering a sports book and you're trying to call it something else, which it isn't.
Number three.
Big 4-4 brought to you by our pals at Battleborne Injury Lawyers. Candy's in. It's Cofield, ESPN Las Vegas, ESPN Reno. I kind of like the back and forth between Michigan and Ohio State. And last year, we got pepper spray involved. That was glorious to watch. What was the big step this year in the rivalry when Ohio State got the job done at Michigan?
So, Ryan Day talked this week a little bit about how he had a system in place for what would happen if the Ohio State headsets went out.
Oh, now I'm getting the silent treatment. Internet floppage, candy issues, left us on a cliffhanger. By the way, the CFP rankings are coming out. Tulane 20, Michigan 19, Arizona 18, Virginia 17. I'll get to 16 in a second. They're revealing 15 through 10. I'm also intrigued by 25 through 20. But Utah is at 15, so long shot on Utah in terms of where they are, not really inhaling distance. Vanderbilt, intriguing, would need a lot of breaks. They're 10-2. Let's bring in Candy again. Adam.
Steve Cofield.
Yes, you. Starting to set up your Michigan-Ohio State post-game potential fracas with the fact that Ryan Day was very prepped. He was ready to go.
Well, why might something go wrong at the Big House in Michigan? I don't know. Ohio State was prepared for it. But Ryan Day talked this week about how he had to go to a system where Julian Say and his quarterback had to come over to the sidelines on every play to get the play called in. Because mystically, mysteriously, magically, the headsets and the communication from coach to quarterback stopped working mid-game at Michigan. They asked Ryan Day, why were you ready for that? And he kind of gave a nod and a wink like, yeah, you know, big game, things happen. What's with this Connor Stallions level cloak and dagger crap?
Like, I apologize. I set this up poorly. Do you think that was it? You think they're still doing stuff at Michigan in spite of all that happened? Okay.
Yes, I absolutely. Is Sharon Moore coming to Michigan from, I don't know, Manchester United? No, he worked under Jim Harbaugh. He worked under Jim Harbaugh, the same guy who has a show cause on him, the same guy from Connor Stallions. And Michigan looks so damn small time at a point where they actually have had four consecutive wins in this series, doing some stuff where all of a sudden the headsets go out in the middle of the game. Could it happen? Sure. Did it happen on purpose? I can't imagine it didn't, man.
Number two.
So CFP is being introduced right now. And we're very interested here in the local market in what could happen with this group of six bid, Mr. Candy. JMU is 25, North Texas 24, Iowa 23, Georgia Tech 22, 21 is Houston. Tulane is sitting there at 20. I don't see UNLV anywhere. Don't see Boise anywhere. So I guess this would just about officially knock the Mountain West from stealing a group of six bid unless something wacky happens with the ACC. How do you feel about the ACC with 7-5 Duke against 10-2 Virginia? By the way, Virginia checked in at number 17.
I feel like if you're the ACC and you don't end up getting a team in, and P.S., it is entirely possible you don't end up getting a team in, then you have no one to blame but yourself. How'd they set the rules up? They set the rules up to allow Duke in by having a tiebreaker that involves common opponents. Well, Steve, how big's the damn ACC these days?
Right. So everyone's not playing everyone.
Right. Right. So how do you have common opponents? These two teams had two common opponents. And now you've got a Duke team that has five losses, a Virginia team that lost to a bad NC State, but not a conference game. Don't count it. Don't look. Don't pay attention, Steve. It happened over here. It happened with my right hand. Look at my left hand. Look at my left hand. Don't look at my right hand. Look at my left hand, because it happened over here, because you have a weird thing where Virginia played a conference game that wasn't a conference game.
I don't mind Duke being involved in this whole thing with a weird tiebreaker. Duke actually has been well-regarded in spite of a 7-5 record most of the year. I know Herb Street was kind of mocking on the ACC. Even stronger than you just were. And I saw a comment from someone saying, I really hate how derisively Herb Street just talked about Duke playing for a spot in the playoff. That's a hilariously fun college football thing. Drives me insane how much most of the SEC Big Ten-minded people in the sport seem to hate what makes the sport great. Do you get that?
Yeah, and I think that you get it a lot more from the old-time power brokers, and I'm including ESPN in that. I'm including Kirk Herbstreit in specific in that, right? The SEC Big Ten control this sport. It's not a mystery to anybody listening at this point. But that's all the more reason, Steve, why I don't think the ACC has any room for self-inflicted wounds. And ending up with Virginia and Duke in this championship game, come on. Who do you really want there if you're the ACC, right? We get this discussion all the time when it comes to conference tournaments in basketball. Who is it that you want to be representing the league when it comes down to it? Do you want it to be whoever got hot in March? Or do you want it to be your blue blood who actually has a chance to make some noise, get a decent TV slot, maybe make some units for your conference when it comes down to it?
Number one.
Well, after a long last, Carter Hart is going to be getting the start for Vegas Golden Knights. You don't love this, huh?
I just don't love the way it sets up, man. Like, if you're comfortable with the Carter Hart thing, God bless you. I'm not. But Golden Knights are struggling at the moment. They're third in the division. Their goaltending has been generally a mess without Aiden Hill. Frankly, it wasn't even that great when he was in. If all the situation circumstances here set up for this to be Carter Hart gets sort of swept in as the guy who makes the Golden Knights go right at this point of the year, and kind of all the creepiness and all the weirdness of this gets swept under the rug even more than it has already. And if you don't know what we're talking about, Carter Hart was acquitted, but was one of the five Hockey Canada players who had been charged in a sexual assault case in Ontario. Only a couple of them have been able to even get a minor league deal. Carter Hart's the only one in the NHL. He's going to be the first one to come back from it with VGK tonight. And again, the usual caveats, he was acquitted, etc., etc. Read the details of the case. Might not be guilty, but it's still creepy as hell.
So what do you think should happen to him long term? Should the NHL not have given him a chance? I mean, by our system, he has been, or by their system, he has been cleared.
Yep.
I guess it's an organization decision. Should he not be allowed to play in the NHL? Would you be more comfortable if the Knights didn't allow him to play here in Vegas?
Well, there's a big difference between does the league allow him to play and does an individual team decide to bring him into the fold? And we've talked a lot about the fact the Golden Knights didn't actually announce this signing with any fanfare. They announced it with a statement about what Carter Hart had gone through and the fact that he had been acquitted, et cetera, et cetera. They didn't seem excited about it. If you're going to own it, own it. I've said that on the show before. You own the Carter Hart thing if that's what you're going to do. But there's a big difference between you were acquitted of the charges against you and you are now entitled to what you used to have. And you're in a job market where there are plenty of people available to do that job. If the Golden Knights think he can help, well, then you got to take what comes with it. And I'll be very curious to see how the fans react tonight.
Well, we got 20 seconds left. How do you think VGK fans are going to react? I don't think there's going to be a lot of pushback.
Nope, I don't think so at all. I don't think so at all. And I think that's the circumstance I'm talking about. We're talking about a team that is struggling right now, that needs help, and is ready to say, hey, anybody you can help, raise your hand.
Big 4-4 brought to you by Battleborne Injury Lawyer. 766-1400 is the number. Up next, we go behind the counter. William Hills, Ray Cleaver is up on the NFL and college football.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Okay, we go behind the counter here in just a second. Reminder, Mountain West Conference football title game coverage begins at 2 o'clock with Cofield and Company on the road, ESPN Las Vegas. 2 until 4, pregame at 4 o'clock, kickoff at 5 o'clock, all from Boise on this Friday. We'll get to the line in that game in just a couple minutes. Let's go behind the counter as we do every week on Tuesdays with Ray Cleaver from William Hill. He's up with Steve Cofield, Adam Candy. Ray, how are you?
Doing great. How you guys doing after a wonderful Thanksgiving?
Pretty good, man. We got a good week of football to break down here as We come out of the gates on a Thursday with the Cowboys and the Lions and lots of offensive figures, we'll put it that way, to bet on in this one. You guys have a Thursday tailbacks parlay that pays 16-1, but there's a lot of big names in this one, a lot of star power, and that's why the total is a very strong 54.5 with the Lions laying 3.
Well, and it's kind of a winner get out of the way type game. Loser may be out for the rest of the season as far as playoffs. The winner puts themselves in a really good spot to maybe move into that wild card or possibly even better. So, I mean, it is maybe the most important Thursday game we've had in a few years.
What do you think is going to happen?
I think Detroit's going to get right, but I don't like him calling plays on the offensive end for the Lions. I sure would like him to manage the game. And Dallas just seems to hang around. They have what a deadly duo of wide receivers. I mean, it's incredible. Dak Prescott having a fabulous year, but going on to Detroit on the road, I lean towards the Lions.
Ray Cleaver, William Hill is up on ESPN Las Vegas, ESPN Reno. All right, let's go to the top of the Sunday board, and let's talk about the Commanders and the Vikings and what's going to happen for Mini at quarterback, Max Brosmer, oh boy, last week. And Washington really fought hard on Monday night. So how are the bettors reacting to this one? What's the number right now?
Well, the number's 1.5 on the Vikings. Why, I don't know. I really don't. It's got to be a home field, and they just think that Washington maybe gave it all they had on Monday night, and now they're going to Minnesota, and J.J. McCarthy's going to be the guy this week, I understand. Max Brosmer was just, I told everybody all week, Max Brosmer is not an NFL quarterback. He was terrible at Minnesota. Now he's with the Vikings. I really believe if he hadn't been a local kid, he would have never gotten signed to the practice squad when he did. And then with Carson Wentz and J.J. getting hurt, it just thrust him into a position for him to show how terrible he really was. I take the Commanders and the points just because I don't know how the Vikings are going to do anything. They're absolutely stunningly bad offensively.
Miami laying 3 against the Jets. Couple teams that surprising amount of fight that they've showed in the last couple of weeks.
I admit I had the Jets on Sunday and I thought I was done like 3 times and they just kept fighting back. And it was very impressive in the same way with Miami, although Miami was ahead 16-0 in that game and gave it back. So I don't know, you know, take the home dog. I mean, they're both playing like there's something on the line, and the Jets being the Jets are just dumb enough to mess up their draft picks by winning a few here at the end. So, you know, they're just the Jets. That's what they do.
Well, if we're going to talk about the Jets being the Jets and that's what they do, what a perfect transition to talking about Cleveland and Tennessee. Browns now out to 4 against the Tennessee Titans. Ray, should either team want to win this game considering what it means for the draft?
No, the only thing is I do think Tennessee might want to win just a little bit because Cam Ward doesn't care about the draft and he's going to want to play well. It's just who he is. He's a very competitive quarterback with no talent on the team. But with a total of 33.5, 34, and being on Lake Erie, a low total says take the dog and just plug your nose, go to the window and say I'll take the Titans plus the points. If both teams lost, it would probably be these two teams. So I have a very good friend who always says with Cleveland, he goes, well, it's the Browns. So it's the Browns. Expect the worst.
Ray Cleaver with us. William Hill. You can download the William Hill mobile sports account right now. You get up to $250 in bonus bets, and then you're good to bet anywhere on the go in the state of Nevada. It's a great, great wagering menu. Great's not the right word. Deep wagering menu. And the parlays are tremendous. The odds boost is awesome. We'll give you more of the odds boost for the NFL in a couple minutes. All right, moving down the list here of NFL games, big NFL games. I don't get this one. Maybe I'm stupid and stubborn on the Steelers. They are terrible, but they're getting 6 against Baltimore.
Yeah. Baltimore plays Pittsburgh. The oldest saying in all of Vegas is just take the dog. Because they're just going to play a close game. It doesn't matter how good or bad they are. They just always seem to play a close game. And they got to play twice in the last 5 weeks, and it could depend on who wins that division. Baltimore just looks inept offensively. Their defense isn't as good as what I believe all the experts thought. Pittsburgh's defense is definitely not as good as what the experts thought. Aaron Rodgers hasn't helped. I do think the broken bone in his wrist did hamper him on Sunday. But I'm just going to take the 6 points, and hopefully it turns into what I think might be the ugliest game of the weekend, including the Titans-Browns. This might be really ugly.
Indy now 1.5 against Jacksonville.
What a great game that is. It really is. For a football fan, it's great. Maybe not traditionalist, but for football fans, this is really a great game. Jacksonville, underrated. Trevor takes more grief than anybody I've ever seen as far as a guy as talented as he is. The problem is that Daniel Jones just can't move. He does have a fracture in that fibula. Even though it's a hairline, he can't move the way he does. And when you take the running game away from him, it takes a big weapon away from the Colts where they can isolate on Jonathan Taylor running the ball. I think at home I'd take Jacksonville plus the points, although I really have to admit I really like the Colts this year, and I'd like to see them end up in one of the higher seeds in the AFC. But I do think their schedule down the end is very, very difficult.
Ray Betters not believing in the Bears' resurgence, at least against this Green Bay team. Packers out to 6.5 this week against Chicago.
Yeah, my favorite two teams are the Green Bay Packers and whoever's playing the Bears. So this week I have them both playing the same game. But it is too many points. But when you think about it, it's only a touchdown, and I don't think you're going to see a lot of field goals kicked in this game. It is December in Green Bay. I believe you're going to have to move the ball. Field position is going to be key, and I can see Green Bay winning 20-10, 17-10. I think the Bears can – I think they're going to cause problems for Caleb. I really believe that Micah is going to introduce himself to Caleb a few times in this game. So I'm trying not to be a homer, but I really believe that Green Bay wins by 7-10 points.
Chiefs against the Texans, the resurgent Texans, great defense. Chiefs, good defense. 3.5, Casey, just 3.5.
We've been talking about the Chiefs being a must-win games for, 3 weeks now? And they just keep falling flat on their face. They are 6-6, and we're treating them like they're 9-3. They lose this one, they're done. I mean, they really are. They lose almost every tiebreaker. This would be another tiebreaker they would lose to the Texans. And in a must win, I guess I would take Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes anytime. But that Texans D might be the best defense in the NFL. They just don't allow anything. And Mahomes is going to have to be sharp. They're going to have to play their best football. And I don't know, it's a night game, so it does help Kansas City because that stadium can get rocking. But I don't have a pick in this game. I really don't. Whoever you pick, you're not wrong until the game's over on this one.
Rick Lever with us. All right, let's hit some college football games. Ray, of course, from William Hill Sportsbook. First of all, in the CFP, Alabama off kind of a shaky win against Auburn, somehow moved up in the CFP. We can see they're developing some storylines here. Bama and Georgia, where's the money going? And the total is actually way up from the first meeting, from 47.5 to 53.5.
Yeah, well, this time they get to play indoors at the Georgia Dome, where Georgia just played last week, which I believe is the reason the line has went up. We are taking money on Georgia. It's basically a home game for them. They play more games at the Georgia Dome than any other neutral site stadium. So, I mean, I think the line will get to 3 and freeze. it could stay at the 2.5 that it's at now, but I do believe it'll bounce up a little bit to 3 and then just freeze right there. I think my question on all of these games, why are they playing them anymore? Yep. Do either one of these coaches want to get anybody hurt before the playoff? Ohio State, you know, lost to Michigan last year, and it didn't even seem to matter. Nobody really even remembers because they went on to win the national title. Georgia and Alabama are both in. Same with Indiana and Ohio State. Indiana may have a reason to win this game this week. They haven't won a Big Ten title since 20 years before sex. I mean, seriously, Indiana hasn't won a Big Ten title in a long, long time. So both of them games, I'm sitting there going, what real difference does it make? I think they're all going to play conservative football. I lean to under in these games.
I like that tip.
Because what's that?
Ray, we're up against it. I like that tip. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon, buddy. Good luck.
All right. Have a great day, guys.
There he is. Ray Cleaver, William Hill Sportsbook. We'll get to more of the college lines and some of the changes, including UNL.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Adam Candy, Cofield. We finished up with Ray Cleaver starting to talk about some of the title games and the odds. And let me correct the total on Alabama-Georgia is 47.5. That's what it was the first time around. I want to get to a little UNLV talk, more Lane Kiffin, more of what's going on the college football coaching front. You love Boise. You're the one. You love it. You love it. And UNLV could be faced with going to Boise 2 times in the next 3 weeks. Doesn't sound like they'll go to the Potato Bowl, according to experts. Other experts online keep putting UNLV in the Potato Bowl, so that would be quite the deal. I'm not sure that the Boise folks will want UNLV there, especially based on the fact that I don't think Las Vegas are going to travel to this title game on Friday. Candy, you know Boise. You know meteorology, at least I hope you do. I'm looking for a name of a wintry mix. It's not a wintry mix. I thought there was a new popular word for rain, snow mix, but I can't find it.
What's it? Grapple, right?
That's Grapple? What it was. Grapple. Yeah.
Why do I know that?
I don't know, but I was thinking of something else. It was dirtier.
Hello.
I don't know why, but grapple. Oh, and that's why. And do you know how to spell grapple?
With a G. That's
it's not. It's
know.
Not like topple. It's a G-R-U-A. I misspelled that. G-R-A-U-P-E-L. Grapple.
Grapple.
It's snow pellets or soft hail. Okay. It's supposed to be 40, somewhere between 40 and 43. I have a feeling it's going to be colder in Boise on Friday with precip. So I'm not sure what that means, but I need to know before we start recommending any sort of total play. On UNLV and Boise, the total is 58.5. It was an 87-point game in the first meeting.
Wow. 58.5. That feels... let's take the 87-point game out of it in the first place. What has been the story of this UNLV team for the bulk of the season? Score and be scored.
Right.
Like that to me is kind of a surprising number. I thought you were going to say we needed to know what the grapple situation was so you knew how to dress for the sidelines.
You know, I got a pretty good warm-up in Reno. Now, when I say warm-up, I had to kind of scramble together what I was going to wear in Reno because – I am really getting absent-minded in my old age. I don't even know how I'm doing the show anymore. I arrived for the flight to Reno for the battle for the Fremont Cannon without my luggage. I had luggage. Like, I had one roll bag that had some stuff in it, but, like, equipment. And I happened to put my winter coat separate from the luggage. But my actual luggage with everything in it was at home. So I went out and shopped in Reno and bought some winter stuff. So I think I'm well prepared. Although I want to know if I can, am I going snow or am I going poncho? Because there's a big difference between rain and snow, as people out there know. And when it's cold, hello.
Well, I
many questions here, but largely, where in the fashion forward streets of Reno were you shopping, or was this just a little Wally World trip?
No, they have stores. They have the big box stores. Luckily, they were close by. It's not that small a city. I mean,
so like Home Depot.
Yes, I did.
You went for an apron.
I went. I have a full hunting outfit, if I can say it, ready to go for Boise. I need some camouflage so when stuff's thrown at me, they miss me.
Oh wow! I would clown you if I hadn't, like, back in my UNLV play-by-play days, if I hadn't actually shown up to a game without any of my broadcast equipment. Like
you did it.
I've been there, man.
Yeah.
I did it, and thank God it was at a time when I was living close to family and I could call up the family and say, anybody get over to my house and grab me a bag and bring it over here real quick because I need to get on the air. We made it. Just was ugly.
It's not the worst one I've done. There was another trip to San Diego where I took both sets of keys for both cars at the house with me to the airport. I'll give you the follow-up on that one on the way back.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Candy, jog my memory. You are willing to play along with the TV show, the drama fest that is the CFP, or are you one of those on the show that just freaking cannot stand it?
Oh no, come on. Let's have fun.
Right?
Right? Like let's enjoy the whole college football tarot card reading process that we get subjected to every week. I enjoy it.
Here's what came out a little while ago. Ohio State won, Indiana, Georgia, Texas Tech, and Oregon. So Oregon at 5, Texas Tech at 4. I would assume Texas Tech, they're a lock if they win the Big 12. If they lose to BYU, then all hell breaks loose. If they played close to BYU, I wonder if they would flip Oregon and Texas Tech. Probably not. Ole Miss did not tumble. I actually think Ole Miss should be in line to either be the 12 seed or out without Lane Kiffin. This is nonsense. They screwed over Florida State when their quarterback went down. You lose your freaking coach and many of your offensive minds, and you're still at 6. I don't get that one. Texas A&M dropped, but not far enough. Oklahoma is 8, A&M 7. Alabama with a win at Auburn, check that, yeah, against Auburn, close, somehow leapfrogged Notre Dame. I think the committee is listening to all these morons who think Notre Dame is undeserving of this. Notre Dame, as I've told you for the last 4 weeks, is the number 2 team in the country. John Murray over at the Westgate says that Notre Dame is the top 4 team in the country as well. BYU's 11, Miami's 12. We know that at least one group of 6 school has to be in. We know that the ACC should get representation, but may not if Duke is the winner at 8-5. From there, Texas 13, Vandy 14, Utah on down is officially out. Virginia is 17. They could win the ACC title. And then group of 6, Candy, they put in Tulane at 20, North Texas at 24, James Madison at 25. I hope, UNLV's 26, and with like a 56-10 victory at Boise, maybe they could leapfrog, but I have a feeling that's too much to overcome now. What strikes you in that I gave a lot there? Is there anything that sounds a little goofy to you?
Well, look, let's go in the order that you brought it up. Start with the James Madison, North Texas, Tulane thing. What they're telling you is that James Madison does not have a path in, right? But by putting North Texas where they put North Texas, by putting North Texas above JMU, they're making clear that no matter who wins that American game, they're going to be above JMU, right, in terms of G5, G6, whatever you want to call it. Okay, so that's one piece. But I think the most interesting piece of all of this is that we've been waiting all year to find out, what does the committee really think of head-to-head, right? Does head-to-head really matter? And the answer is it does not, because Notre Dame 2 spots above Miami tells you that the committee is more interested in who is a better team right now than who beat who early in the year. And I think that's right. That's absolutely the right way to go about this.
Head to head is everything. I'm with you. I don't believe this. Can we go back on the Commodore 64 or check the computer? I don't know how you have stuff labeled. See, do we have the Michael Irvin flip out from last week where he dropped like 9 F-bombs? Because he's like, now head to head doesn't matter. What? Just going crazy.
Mm. Yeah. So you got that. And I think the other thing that's really clear from this is the amount of respect that they're giving to Texas. The fact that they're still showing Texas as a team that has an outside path, but a path into this thing.
Yeah, I will say on social, I have some tolerance for it. I'm here to listen to it. I saw cases made against pretty much everyone from eight on down, inside and outside of the CFP as to why they don't belong. I've seen strong cases that suggest Alabama should not be in, others that say Oklahoma shouldn't be in. A lot of it comes down to the fact that the SEC, again, was very top-heavy, and the teams at the bottom just, like, they played some close games, but they didn't win games. So you've got a bunch of teams that really achieved a nice record in the SEC overall and didn't have a lot of quality wins because the middle and bottom of the SEC just dumped out.
I think the other piece of that is if you're going to go and go resume by resume when you look at that group, and I think we can pretty safely say that everyone in the top seven is getting in the way they set this up.
Yeah.
And I guess maybe even the top eight, but that's where the question comes in for me with this Oklahoma team. That's a really good defense, and that is not a really good offense. That is a team that has very, very clear flaws, that is being ranked a couple spots ahead of Notre Dame, that is being given the respect against Alabama, which you have to based on the regular season. But man, oh man, I could very easily see Oklahoma being the team that by the time we get done with the first round of the CFP, we look at and say, man, I don't know why they were there.
Does a head-to-head matchup not matter? Next season or last season, that's when it didn't matter. But if it's in this season, it should matter.
Well, if it's in this season, it matter. He's amped up again. Michael Irvin's amped up again.
That's one way to put it.
So, Alabama, I don't even really understand what game they're playing by moving Alabama ahead of Notre Dame. Someone smarter than me can kind of figure this out. Because they're not leaving out Notre Dame, okay? That's not going to happen. Alabama is in a meaningless game. But will they look at it as meaningless? Like, does Alabama have to win to get in? Does Alabama have to play close to get in? What do you think? Is there a difference between those two? Is Alabama in?
Yeah. No. This is... We hadn't gotten that far down my thoughts yet, but absolutely with Alabama, they're telling them when you're in, lose, you're out. That's it.
Oh, that's it. They're not straight up. It's not even like you can lose close. You're good.
Well, let's go ahead and. I'm saying lose any way, you're out if you're Alabama. I think that's the way that this shapes up. Let's look at it the way that it is right now. Who's behind them? A Notre Dame team that they'll be happy to jump back in front of them. You got a BYU team that, again, they've got a chance to play their way in, and had they played a closer game against Texas Tech the first time, might not be in this situation. And then you've got Miami, where, again, the head-to-head doesn't seem to matter. It's not one spot, it's two spots. And then you've got teams where Texas and Vandy, and it has to stop at Texas, right? Because of the Texas win against Vandy, then I think you're probably stopping right there and say nobody below 13 has a real shot to get in outside of Tulane, North Texas. I guess Virginia, if we're counting championship games. But I think, no, Alabama's got to win to get in.
Alabama losing in the SEC title game and not getting in, does that make it a 99% certainty that the system is changing? And both the Big Ten and the SEC are going to go to a play-in format with like a six-team playoff for bids.
I mean, we'll see if Greg Sankey changed his mind on that one, because
that was the Big Ten's. That's the Big Ten's idea, because the Big Ten, I think, feels like,
right,
hey, we don't have a chance to have a bunch of, you know, like Texas Vandy situations, which the Big Ten actually does. It just didn't work out this year, but there are years where the Big Ten could be considered to get five and six teams in, like the SEC, but. I guess that's my point. Like you just said, Sankey's got to change his mind. Some presidents have to change their mind. If Alabama loses in what is a meaningless title game, is that going to be the eradication of the title games?
It could be, but let me put it this way to you. Would Alabama be where they are right now if they hadn't played with their food against Auburn in the Iron Bowl? Like, like they needed a late touchdown and a late stop to hang on in a game that would have been an elimination game against a team that fired their coach this year. So I get it. It's a rivalry game. We can talk all about that. We know all about it here in Vegas. But they have had their opportunities to play their way into a better situation than they were in last week.
Lane Kiffin and the fallout from that. There's no fallout, right? So they didn't drop this whole notion that, hey, Florida State, their quarterback was out, and you know, then Florida State's not in a CFP system, CFP-like system. So Ole Miss is going to be okay. But this last week or so had so many good storylines. I know you wanted to start with this notion that, hey, we're going to push back on these coaches. They're not gods. And then you see things play out, and you're like, yeah, they're gods, because no one has any backbone against these coaches moving, against these coaches asking for giant buyouts and getting them.
As much as we want to talk about how much has changed in college football, Steve, not that much has changed when it comes to the coaches. Like, if that was your least favorite part of college football, if you are out there saying, I hate that there's no loyalty with these coaches and they're always moving around, then last week you got to feed the hate. If you got to say, I hate this whole transfer portal, I hate the way players are always moving around and going for the biggest paycheck, well, guess what? You got to feed the hate last week, because the timing of Lane Kiffin leaving for LSU was entirely forced by the way that the calendar sets up. If you hate the way that colleges kowtow to these coaches, if you hate the way public universities that should be focused on education, if you hate the way they're throwing money around at a guy who is definitely the flavor of the moment, but I don't exactly think he is Nick Saban. In fact, he's a guy who Nick Saban needed to rehab in order for him to get back to this point even. Then you got to feed your hate last week, Steve. Like, this story really had something for everyone in terms of, what do you hate about the way college football was? What do you hate the way about college football is? Whatever it was, you could pull something out of this story last week with Lane Kiffin.
Wasn't the Louisiana governor the one talking all tough about how ridiculous the 53...
No more buyouts!
Yeah.
No more buyouts!
What happened here?
He gave an even stronger one.
Yeah, $14
million. He gave an even stronger one than Brian Kelly had.
Yep, $14 million a year with a massive buyout because football rules in some of these states.
No offset language in the contract, meaning that if they fire Lane Kiffin anytime within that 7 years, Lane Kiffin does not have to go find another job. He gets all of that money, whether he is fired in year one or whether he is fired in year seven.
Also confirmed, kind of pushing back in the face of this notion, oh, LSU, I mean, how much money are people going to spend? How greedy is Lane Kiffin? Ole Miss was ready to match the package, according to multiple people. He just doesn't want to be at Ole Miss. LSU to him is a bigger job and gives him a better chance to win a national championship. Ole Miss tried. There's just certain weaknesses in Mississippi, like its history, that would preclude some coaches from staying there for the long haul.
Congratulations to Lane, by the way. It is not easy to nuke a carefully rebuilt image quite the way that he did this week. Like, people were enjoying the whole idea of Lane Kiffin, Instagram poster, yoga guy. Like, what did they have, a proposal on the field where Lane came and photobombed them at the end of it? Oh, he's a fun guy. Look at this Lane Kiffin. He's got Ole Miss back. Psych! Psych, buddy. Still the same guy under the mask. Fred and Daphne yanking the mask off. Who is it? It's Lane Kiffin. Oh, no. It's old Lane Kiffin. It's the same guy everybody's always hated.
And then we just saw a bunch of the jobs fill up, which I also think is very funny that all year long SEC fans and SEC admins and the bosses are like, group of five and group of six. It's not even the same kind of sport. Oh, we need coaches? Let's go raid the American for like five of their coaches. Well, I guess they do have talented football in the American and sometimes in the Mountain West, because they couldn't freaking hire those coaches quickly enough. On the way back, we'll get to some NFL, we'll get to some Raiders, but we do have to look at one situation. This feels very UNLV-like. Remember when UNLV decided Dave Rice could go in the middle of January and then the coaching search